He sees timing after waiting months and months and months for the prosecutor to request arrest warrants. There was another 6 months before issuing them, by which point various nations, including across Africa, were talking about dropping the whole idea of the ICC, of the International Criminal Court, since it would only prosecute Africans. Why not have our own African criminal court if it's going to be that way? And now they've issued arrest warrants for two Israelis and for some other alleged criminals in Asia. It seems they're expanding beyond Africa. Were they really dotting I's and crossing T's for 6 months, or did they finally catch on that if they wanted to look international, they would have to, you know, go beyond, not just go beyond Africa, but for the first time ever, issue arrest warrants for allies of the Pentagon?
Well, it certainly seems that the United Nations ambassadors and diplomats and staffers are confronted with the reality that an edifice that it took many, many decades to build up is being undermined by some of the very people that got it going in the first place. And, in August, we met with some of these staffers and they were generous with their time. I think they were fairly honest in saying that the consequences for them could be very grave in terms of their countries being punished by the United States if they seemed in the Security Council or in the United Nations to be going against U.S. perceived interest. I certainly don't think we could say, oh, well, now we're at such a state of emergency, people are starting to wake up. You're right. This is not a state of emergency that's just been broached. This has been going on since the beginning, and it only gets worse. Again, thinking of innocent people who can't change the circumstances they're in. Think of all the people who've been maimed and lost limbs but can't get prostheses, and the medical care has been devastated all across Gaza and increasingly in the West Bank, even in Lebanon. So the cruelty of these policies will certainly, I think, contribute toward a younger generation that would understandably feel bitter and betrayed and want revenge. So what good do we see coming of these policies?
Great question. Kathy, you've been involved in lobbying UN delegations in New York, and you were mentioning earlier some letters that are being sent. Can you talk about those efforts and who's listening?
Well, over 100 NGOs have signed a letter that the same letter will go to Philemon Yang, who is the president of the United Nations General Assembly, and then also to Antonio Guterres, the secretary general of the United Nations. And these will go out by registered mail tomorrow. They'll also go to, they call him the chef de cabinet. So by their own rules, they have to respond once the registered letter arrives. What kind of response can we expect? I would sure love to see the students who've been so squelched in their university campus efforts. I mean, boy, over the summertime, university chancellors and presidents and department chairs got together and figured out, okay, how can we make sure the students don't have a meeting space and they're not allowed a legitimate stature as a university organization? So at least in New York, how about if the students don't even try to demonstrate on their campuses, but head down to First Avenue and 43rd Street and Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza and take over, occupy those areas, and let the students make their heft and make their very clarion message heard amongst these United Nations officials. I think that would be a worthwhile thing to do, and it's possibly, it's possible maybe the media would pick up on that. And I wonder if the level of punishment might be far less than what students would encounter on their own campuses.
I know the sentiment is still there, and students are doing things online, and the students at Yale have just voted for divestment and so forth. Can students or any human being who gives a damn occupy space at the United Nations in New York and be on international land out of the reach of the wonderful New York Police Department or not?
No, I don't think so. But I would say that the arresting officers in the immediate area of the United Nations are comparably gentle in our experience when they pick you up then, and the consequences aren't so onerous. I remember once arriving at O'Hare Airport, and I had missed 16 trials for actions at the United Nations during the time of economic sanctions against Iraq. And I got off of an international flight coming back from Iraq, and there were armed guards with dogs. And I thought, wow, there must have been somebody on that plane that was really dangerous. Well, it was me. And they were coming for me because I'd missed so many court dates. And there was almost no consequence. A kindly lawyer went to court with me, and I was let off scot-free. Now, that doesn't mean that students might not incur consequences because of a record that would appear on a resume, or that it wouldn't affect their future studies. But I was very impressed, David, by a video you put together, which will be used in a webinar on the 15th of December, featuring young people from Gaza who will talk about what their experiences of displacement and being bombed have been, and how this has interrupted their studies and caused them to lose so many family members. And the video begins with interviews with two young UK activists who are protesting a weapon-making company called Elbit. And the young woman says that her sense of ethics is not so compromised that she would let go of her duty, her responsibility to prevent, do everything she can to try to prevent the sale of the weapons that Elbit would send to Israel. And her companion in this effort echoes that. And we also see that at Travis Air Force Base, people were lined up to block the entrance to that base and stop the shipping of weapons. And then in Canada, Rachel Small with World Beyond War and her companions have organized so many actions, one of the most recent of which they took over the Canadian Parliament in Ottawa. Well, these are the kinds of things that ought to happen, and we also need as many people as can to go over to the West Bank, to go to the border with Gaza, and to wage their protests in person and also to show solidarity.
I was going to ask you about, I'm glad you mentioned this upcoming online event, December the 15th, that people can find at worldbeyondwar.org, that will have, you and I will certainly be there, but speakers will include Cindy and Craig Corey, the parents of Rachel Corey, Dr. Mazin Kumsia, tell me if I say anyone's name wrong, Phyllis Bennis from Institute for Policy Studies, Mohammed Abu Asi, Mahdi Naeem. These last two are young activists from Palestine. What am I forgetting?
Well, also the video footage that you've put together. And so the idea is to try to keep on encouraging people who've already done quite a lot to keep it up, don't get tired, do more. Because the winter months are fast approaching. People who've been displaced, some of them more than 10 times, are living in tents under abysmal conditions without anything even approaching adequate sanitary conditions. Just, over 1,000 people using a toilet space, and the possibilities for disease for waterborne diseases and contaminants because of all of the many, many bombs that have been dropped. All of this is afflicting people, the majority of them women and children, who have certainly meant us no harm.
Absolutely not. Kathy Kelly, I wonder when people protest, or we propose that more people protest more at the United Nations, what the demand is, right? Not this CNN question of what is your one simple, stupid demand, but what is the list of things that the United Nations could be doing, that the General Assembly could be doing because of the failure of the Security Council? I don't think this is in Amnesty International or some other group's reports, but it seems, you know, the really relevant question now is, what is it we want people to do?
Well, when the Security Council stymies a potential action toward peace, the General Assembly does have the capacity to invoke what's called the Uniting for Peace resolution and overturn that Security Council veto that the United States has issued four times now. Also, as I mentioned before, they could suspend Israel from the United Nations General Assembly. Israel would no longer have a right to vote. It's also certainly imperative that the humanitarian corridors be opened up so that aid can reach people and that the United Nations Relief and Works Association continue to be funded. The European Union engages in more trade with Israeli settlers than any other entity in the world. The European Union should stop that trade. They're obligated to stop that trade under the United Nations resolution that's already been passed, and it's also already been passed by the International Court of Justice, that there should be no more arms shipments, no weapon shipments whatsoever to Israel, and nothing at all that would support the Israeli military in its continued illegal occupation of the occupied Palestinian territory. So, and the other thing which would be unusual, but it is doable, is to send a peacekeeping force that's unarmed. We talk about UCP, unarmed civilian protection. And there are people sown all throughout the world, some of whom have been very, very active with World Beyond War, who are seasoned, who know how to assemble a group of people as civilians without weapons to go over and live alongside people who are at high risk. And it's been proven to be far less expensive, both in terms of human lives and funds, than sending in enormous militaries. So we should remember the United Nations was founded to eradicate the scourge of warfare for future generations. It wasn't founded to sit back and watch as though they're mesmerized and helpless and indifferent.
So the General Assembly could send in unarmed peacekeepers who've been proven effective, more effective arguably than armed peacekeepers, looking at the record, and could suspend Israel, and could, to the extent that its members chose to take part, could enforce an arms embargo and sanctions on those taking part and arming those taking part. And yet the General Assembly behaves as if it were powerless.
Well, and I think this is a kind of a calumny. It's prevaricating. It's not telling the truth. They aren't powerless. The outgoing Secretary General of the United Nations, I think, has tried very, very hard. I wouldn't fault Antonio Guterres, but it seems possible that there still is a kind of a strong arming of the United Nations member states by the United States. And what are people afraid of? I think they're afraid of how the United States could affect them economically, or whether the United States would forbid people to have the military defenses that they would wish to have. So I think we need the United Nations leadership to speak much more bluntly. And then also, for instance, the newly elected government in Ireland, which is actually a return of the two strongest parties, they could say no more usage of Shannon Airport for transporting military, no more trade between Ireland and the settlement industries. So there are many who could take these steps and push and say, our docks are not open to your ships, our workers won't unload or load up the weapons. There are so many actions that people in powerful places could take.
I wanna suggest another crazy idea alongside protesting at the United Nations, and that is protesting at the United States State Department. I watched Senator Bernie Sanders propose a vote and force a vote that failed to block some weapons shipments to Israel. And his argument was that these weapons shipments already violated a bunch of U.S. laws, right? The Foreign Assistance Act, the Arms Exports Control Act, the Leahy laws, et cetera. And I recently asked a member of the U.S. Congress that I won't name, this was off the record, you know, why can't we actually comply with, pick one of these eight laws that are being violated by every shipment of weapons to Israel and just comply with that law? Why do we have to, you know, go through these efforts to create another one? And this Congress member told me, only thing we can do is get a different president 5 years from now.
And there are some people up in Syracuse who aren't willing to wait that long, and they've teamed up with others in upstate New York, and they went to Senator Schumer's office in Albany. Is that right? Or today?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure which city. But anyway, they bought shovels and pitchforks, and they dug up the lawn to dig a grave in order to say to Senator Schumer, you are creating a graveyard for children. And then they've got an excellent flyer that tells the numbers of children who have already died in Gaza. So I think we certainly can't say, oh, well, we have to wait 5 years till we get another president. We're liable to get one that is just as spineless and ineffective at ending wars as President Joe Biden has been.
Absolutely. I think we need to get far more active. One of the things, Kathy Kelly, that we have on our website at World Beyond War is a history of the Christmas truces. Most people are familiar with the stories from World War I and the records of successful Christmas truces over the years. But what do you make of this idea of pushing for a truce or a ceasefire? And I don't mean just in Palestine, but in Sudan or in Ukraine, where one of our board members, Yuri Shelyazhenko, has an interesting proposal for making peace in Ukraine. Is there any value in telling people this has been done before? Why can't we do it again this Christmas?
Well, certainly in terms of any time of the year when there might be the most hope, you would think that it would be the time when many people around the world herald the birth of the Prince of Peace. And I certainly appreciate Yuri making the suggestion that we get behind a Christmas truce, as well as your suggestion, David, that we don't give it a deadline for when it's going to end, but call for a lasting truce. The story in World War I, which was one of the most industrialized slaughters to have ever wiped out a generation of young people, is, I think, so particularly appealing because the soldiers went out and they shared their small Christmas gifts. They played soccer. They recognized one another as human beings. I can remember it was after Christmas, but being in Iraq and in a desert camp along the road to Mecca, we were hoping to interpose ourselves between the warring parties when the United States was getting ready to go to war against Iraq. And we were actually 73 people from 18 different countries. But sure enough, the soccer ball came out, and out in the middle of the desert, the internationals were playing soccer with the Iraqis, and it was all hail and good fellow, and nobody would have wanted to think about slaughtering each other. So let's hope that Ukraine, which has undergone such a loss of life, such needless destruction of infrastructure, and the same for Russia, let's hope that the powers that be can come to their senses and make for themselves a worthwhile legacy by putting an end to war.
Kathy, we've got just 2 minutes left, so I hate to ask big questions, but interesting proposal from our friend Yuri, who thinks that NATO should allow its members to ban nuclear weapons, as you'd think compliance with the law would dictate anyway, and that Ukraine should be given some sort of halfway NATO membership without Article 5 and with a ban, with signing on to the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. I recently read that U.S. corporations, Western corporations, have bought more land in Western Ukraine than Russia has occupied in Eastern Ukraine. It seems there's something there to be negotiated from both sides. What do you think are the possibilities of actually getting peace in this place?
Well, of course, I'd still want to hold the line for saying disband NATO entirely. I'm not even sure that the European Union makes very much sense as long as they are such sworn militarists and that they're compromising neutrality in country after country. But the people do have to get to the negotiating table. And if people can sense that there are some gains, some positives that they can offer, and if it can put an end to the horrible bloodshed, then I think that's something to call for.
I couldn't agree more. We've been speaking with Kathy Kelly, a wonderful writer, speaker, author, activist, president of the board of World Beyond War, where I'm privileged to work as well. Kathy Kelly, thank you for everything you're doing and for coming on Talk World Radio.
Thank you, David. Wishing you all the best.
This is Talk World Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. Read or listen to today's Peace Almanac entry at peacealmanac.org. All past shows can be heard at talkworldradio.org. Talk World Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way.
All right. Kathy Kelly, she's one of my favorites. I'm so glad that she was on Talk World Radio today. And Talk World Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Patrick Riley, a real estate professional with Century 21 Select, specializing in properties in Chico and Butte Meadows. Patrick is dedicated to helping buyers and sellers achieve their real estate goals with kind, quality service. Patrick can be reached at 530-588-6593 or on Facebook and by Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothing and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers. Cotton Party has been providing friendly service for over 30 years in the heart of downtown Chico at 337 Broadway Street. Cotton Party is grateful for your business and offers gift wrapping with each purchase. More information by calling Cotton Party at 530-893-4923. It is 11:59. This is the Peace and Justice Program. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio. For the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond, the views and opinions expressed on the program are not necessarily the views and opinions of the KZFR staff, board of directors, or its volunteers. I'd like to thank our underwriters for this next hour of programming. I'd like to thank Pure Clean Carpet and Tile Care, featuring eco-friendly soap-free detergents to restore most